Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hey, everybody. It's Mel Allen. Welcome to This Week in Baseball. All right, ladies and gentlemen, Tom Carter's Patriots Talk podcast coming at you. I just wanted to get that out. We got a lot to get to. Bill Belichick addressing the media this week. And we have so much to plumb as to what the great man's plans are. Stay tuned. It's Perry. It's Curran. It's Mel Allen coming at you. Hey, Phil, welcome to This Week in Baseball.
You are one zany son of a gun. Have I ever told you that before?
I'm a little slap happy right now because I've been waiting for Bill Belichick to talk since January. And you know what? Bill Belichick talking usually all the way into the middle of February because his team is good is usually a rite of covering the Patriots. But it hasn't been this year because they stunk last year. They've taken great strides to affect not stinking anymore. And we're hearing more, not about free agency on this particular Bill Belichick day, but about the draft. Your number one takeaway. I love it, Phil. What are the Patriots doing?
My number one takeaway is that the Patriots are going to draft Trey Lance.
See, now you people are wondering, you didn't see that tweet or headline out there.
You didn't see that. Nope. That's what we do. We read between the lines, okay? No, I say that in jest. But I did find some of his answers, Tom, interesting, illuminating in some respect, because we heard him talk about things like how teams should adapt their systems to fit the skill sets of their players, specifically at the quarterback position, how it might be okay to quote unquote overdraft a quarterback based on your grades if you feel like his potential is good enough. And the final thing that reminds me of Trey Lance when I listen back to this Bill Belichick back and forth is that the 2019 film for some players is going to be more valuable than the 2020 film. Now, all Trey Lance has is essentially 2019 film, but he did play one game in 2020 that wasn't awesome. But
You're setting them up. We're going to start knocking them down right now.
Let's do it.
Bill Burt had that first question that Phil referred to, adapting the offense to the player if the player is good enough. Here's Bill talking quarterbacks and styles.
I mean, I think every team is – you know, has their own style of play, has their own, type of offense. And so, you know, you're looking for a player that'll, you know, fit your style, or maybe you want to adapt your style to that player. I think that's the way it is really when you draft, almost any player. If you have a player that has a certain skill set that's an impact player on your team, no matter what position he plays, you probably want to try to accommodate and play to his strengths, utilize his skills the best that you can, whatever position that is. Honestly, it's not that concerned with what the general trends and all that are. It's really just trying to help our team and trying to, you know, find the best methods we can to make our team as competitive as we can, whatever that entails. And there's certainly a lot of, you know, a lot of chapters in that book, a lot of different ways to do it. But ultimately, I think you want to enhance the skills of your players, no matter what position they play. Well, again, I think whoever the players are, whatever position you're talking about, that if you want to enhance their skills, then you want to adapt a little bit of what your scheme is to do that. So that's really a decision that you have to make. We've had a couple of different styles of player at that position. And we tried to do that, you know, in those examples.
Phil, you and I talked a lot about this because we are, based on history, slaves to the notion that the Patriots will continue to run the Earhart, Perkins, Weiss, Brady, McDaniels offense that features option routes and third down backs and short possession throws. but they had a player to do that. That might be something that we are not conditioned to realize might be going the way of the dinosaur if they get a different kind of player.
Yeah, and I'm guilty of that too. I mean, we do our prototypical Patriots series, and who is at the very top of the list in terms of prototypes at that position for the Patriots based on what they've drafted? It's not Trevor Lawrence. It's not Justin Fields. It's Mac Jones. And it's because he checks just about every single box that they have taken in the past. And so I think it's fascinating, Tom, because you mentioned the system that they've run. That system is so vast that they don't necessarily have to move away from it, but they could just emphasize different things, right? So if they want to do the big play action shots down the field time and time again, because they have somebody like Trey Lance, that's in their playbook. They just call more of those types of plays as opposed to some of the option routes and some of the timing based stuff that you're talking about.
And that's something Chris Sims pointed out last year. He said, look, read option is in the Patriots offense. It's in their playbook. As Phil said, it's just been on page 110. It might now show up on page 2 or 3. And it was exactly right what Chris Sims said. Talking to people who are involved with the team over the years, you understand that this part of the year is not devoted to redoing the system, but it is devoted to accentuating parts of the scheme. So what parts of the scheme the Patriots are accentuating right now are built around things that they will do with Cam Newton. They're going to be better because they have two capable tight ends instead of two project tight ends. But if it's Mac Jones, or if it's Trey Lance, or if it's Justin Fields, you have a bridge to the next level in terms of who you can, what you can continue to accentuate, right, Phil? Am I reading that right? Am I getting too in the weeds here with this observation?
I think you're 100% correct. And I think it's just important to point out, you know, that there are
the
different definitions.
Stuff, the Mac Jones stuff we've been hammering you with, or they wouldn't take a Kellen Mond because he runs around, whatever, whoever. Or Kyle Trask is a better fit because he looks moves like Brady did. That means nothing.
No doubt. And I think it's important just to make this distinction. I want you to make it. But the words system and scheme, I think they're often conflated. They don't mean the same thing, right? To me, from what I've gleaned over the years, and you tell me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like the system is your language, your overall philosophy, and the scheme is how you go about approaching that overall philosophy. That is more malleable, whereas the system sort of is what it is.
Yeah, the scheme is, okay, we're playing the Steelers and we're going to spread them out and go five wides and just absolutely torture them. Or we're playing the Colts and they can't stop the run because they got a bunch of tiny little linebackers and defensive linemen. So we're going to go three tackles and just pound the Christ out of them. That's scheme within a system. And the system of the Patriots, as Phil pointed out, is so broad. And you have players who are drafted for their intelligence and versatility oftentimes, because you want to be able to be broad with your system and not be a, they do what we do what we do type of football team, because you're easy to defend them.
And the Patriots showed last year, Tom, that they can adjust the scheme pretty significantly based on who's playing quarterback. And so they can go the more mobile route if they want to, if they take one of these guys, or they could go back to that pocket passer thing if they go with somebody like Jones or Trask.
Be fascinating to know if you hit them with the truth serum and said, Bill, 15 just came upon you. Mac Jones and Justin Fields have both arrived on your doorstep. Don't tell me which one you have graded higher. Which one would you prefer to work with in terms of a toolbox? Not personality, not aptitude at throwing. Which toolbox do you prefer in 2021? It would be interesting to know that, wouldn't it?
It would. And I go back and forth on this because part of me would say, well, we've known one thing for so long, and Mac Jones is the ultimate get the ball out quickly, make good decisions, make quick decisions, whereas Justin Fields is every tool you could ever want, you could ever put on your wish list. But he was, at least at Ohio State, more of a hold on to the ball longer, let routes develop down the field and make those plays. I just feel as though Bill Belichick has so much confidence in himself as a coach and in Josh McDaniels as a coach that he would say, give me the tools and we'll make it work.
What has to happen if you take the tools is you have to embrace the unknown. There will be greater number of plays where after the snap, 2 seconds have elapsed and you don't, and you're not that much closer to knowing where the ball's going or how the play's going to end. And with Mac Jones, that's not going to happen. With Tom Brady, that's not going to happen. So Belichick likes certainty. I mean, he's an economics guy. He likes to play the percentages. The percentages probably are, when it gets past 2 seconds, you can have a wide variety of outcomes. You can have a pick six. You can have an injured quarterback. You can have an 80-yard touchdown. You can have a strip sack fumble. But in that first 2 seconds, probably a smaller range of possibilities. Phil had a great question asking Bill Belichick, where would you decide to shelve the work that you've done in grading these players and perhaps reach a little bit? We're going to play Phil's question because I thought it was well put, and I don't know if I summarized it accurately.
We've seen just some pretty staggering prices teams have been willing to pay for quarterbacks in trades this offseason. And so my question for you is, I guess, given the way that the league values that spot, would you ever be willing to, based on your draft grades, quote unquote, overdraft a quarterback that you liked, knowing that he might not be around if you waited for the point where maybe his grade and your draft position were more closely aligned, if that makes sense?
Well, I think that question really applies to every position on the board. There are players that if you just grade them on what they've done or what their production has been over the course of their career, you're not going to get that player. If you see the player's upside in development and growth, then you pay a much higher price for the player than what his production shows, because you feel that in time or experience or different system or whatever the combination of reasons are, that player will perform above maybe what his production was in college. Could be injury related, could be, as I said, scheme related, it could be, just the physical development of the player. So those are always things that you talk about. It's you're obviously betting on the come there. You're betting on the player's development versus what you might actually see from another player. But in some cases, the upside might be greater. Maybe the downside might be greater too. But at some point, you decide to make that investment, and then when we all see how the player turns out. But that's fairly common at every position. There are always players at every spot that fall into that category that you have to, you're going to have to draft higher than really what they've done. But if you're willing to do that, and that's what they need to do to get the player, then you draft them at a higher spot and hope that his production eventually, reflects the potential that you saw in him.
What made you ask that question?
I asked the question because I feel as though we have, and we've talked about this extensively on this podcast. The question is, how much value do the Patriots place on the quarterback position? Do they feel as though, because of the way they're built, because of the way that they coach, that they are the outliers, as you have mentioned in the past, and they don't necessarily need to make a serious investment at that spot in order to be a good football team? And my question was sort of trying to, I guess in a more concise way, say, listen, the rest of the league values the position a certain way. Do you have to react to that? Or do you just stick to your board? Because, whether or not you actually end up with the guy that you might like, but you don't like at 15, that makes no difference to you. And his answer was different than the answer that I thought I was going to get, which is, yeah, there are cases where if you feel like you want that guy, you do have to overdraft him because you're placing a bet on his potential. And so, again, I think it comes back to, we're talking about the quarterbacks in this draft, Tom. I think we kind of know what Mac Jones is. I don't think we know what Trey Lance is going to be. I don't think we even really know what Justin Fields is going to be. And so, as an economics guy, how comfortable is he placing that bet in the top half of the first round on that position? Because, as I said in the question, if you wait for a certain player to match up his grade with the draft position that you have, he might not be there later. And so you may have to overpay.
I use that observation that I shared as a jumping off point. Look, Bill probably doesn't think that highly. I used it as a jumping off point in conversations with people who know well how the Patriots operate with their offensive philosophies and their personnel. And I said, well, since Bill had 20 years of success with a sixth round pick and he put a seventh round pick in 2008 and got 11 wins, and he found a guy at FCS who turned into a Super Bowl starter in Jimmy Garoppolo, and he's beaten the hell out of all these first round quarterbacks, does that mean Bill doesn't value the position as much? And the counter was made, no, he just hasn't had to be with the proletariat and try and figure out how to get a quarterback. If he has to, he will. He'll be as thirsty as everybody else is for a good one. So to your point, Phil, I think it was a good question to get him on record to say, if we got to get it, is that right? I mean, his answer was kind
of, that's how I read it.
We'll bet on that. We'll bet on a guy who doesn't seem like he's that great if we think he can be great.
If you think he can be great. And that's the key, right? Maybe he looks at Trey Lance and says, oh, I don't know. I mean, he's just not that accurate. And I don't know if we can fix that necessarily. So some might think that he's great. That's just not going to be us. So we'd rather just stick in the second round and take somebody like Kellen Mond. So I don't know how he feels. And that's the overarching question to all of this quarterback conversation. But Tom, I think, you know, while I think if you're a Patriots fan, hoping that the Patriots quote unquote overdraft a quarterback that they feel is talented, I think the sobering part of his answer to that question was it's really the case at every position. So maybe he feel, you know, maybe he does kind of look at the quarterback spot as similar to every other spot. And it gets back to that idea. Do they value it the way the rest of the league does? And I'm not sure he really said one way or the other as far as that question is concerned.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about all from the comfort of your home isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I wasn't going to go here next, but I'm going to segue to it. It's the question that I posed about character concerns and where you draft somebody. And it dovetails with the quarterback because quarterback is a ripple effect position, as in a way that maybe center or guard or inside linebacker isn't. I'm sure you can come up with examples, folks, of guys who are fine, but there's a ripple effect of the position that exists. So you can't really treat it like those other ones, like it's just another spot. And the reason I asked this question is at 15, the Patriots are in line to take a better player who is going to immediately come in with high expectations. And if it's a defensive player, it's going to come in with Jerod Mayo, Devin McCourty, Chandler Jones, Dante Hightower, level expectation. Going to be a leader, going to be an adult. He's going to be productive. He's going to work extremely hard, and he's going to understand that he's going to be kind of the point of the spear, not just in the locker room, but to speak to the media. I asked it relative to Micah Parsons, who's the linebacker from Penn State, who was acknowledged as the number one linebacker prospect, not edge guy, but linebacker prospect. And there are concerns, not that he's necessarily a diabolical human, but that he's immature and might stay that way. So I wanted to know from Belichick, at what point, if you're drafting in that point, do you have to consider maturity level and the impact of the player on the other parts of the team? And is there a point at which you will take him, not Parsons, but that player who might be immature but has room to grow, would you take him later? Here's Bill.
Well, I mean, those are all good questions, and they're all things that we talk about and consider. I mean, ultimately, I mean, it doesn't really matter what round you take the player in. Once he walks in the door, you know, he's a New England Patriot player, and he puts on the uniform and goes out there and competes. It doesn't matter if he's in the second round or the fifth round. That doesn't matter once he's on your team. So whatever his positives and negatives are, whatever he brings to the table, whatever weaknesses you think he might have, or all the other things you brought up, whatever those are or aren't, they're the same no matter, you know, where that individual player gets selected. So, you know, ultimately you want to try to maximize the value of your picks, but the player's the player. So whatever his strengths and weaknesses are, that's what they are. And you know, you try to put a value on that, and you try to figure out what that player will do for your team when he's on your team, what his role will be, what his level of performance will be, and you know, that's part of the process that you use to select them. So it's important with every pick. It doesn't matter, you know, what number it is or what round it is. It's kind of each pick is its own process. The level of talent of the players certainly changes as you go through the rounds in the draft, but I'd say from a process standpoint, it's pretty much the same. I mean, if you get into a later round, you might want to, you know, take a shot on a player, a Julian Edelman player that's maybe, you know, there's some development in that player because he's going to play a position that he hasn't played before, or whatever the circumstances happen to be. But you know, as far as the other parts of it, the work ethic and the aptitude and the character and so forth, commitment to football and that type of thing, you know, those are part of every conversation and every draft pick.
All right, let's zing off the players and talk about the scouting process itself. Bill Belichick did mention that Matt Patricia is involved with the Patriots personnel stuff extensively right now. So are, as we've known, Elliot Wolf, Matt Groh, and Dave Ziegler. How difficult the scouting is this year compared to last year. And it has to be monumentally different. And this is a very undercovered aspect of this draft. Here's Bill. Boom.
Yeah, well, we're always, you know, always looking to get better. Always try to evaluate everything we do and try to find a better way to do it. So that's a... I would say an annual process with the draft, but it's something that we do on a regular basis throughout the course of the season, whether it's, you know, whatever period of time it is. So, you know, always looking to do a better job. There were some things that last year that were unique to the draft process. As I mentioned, some of those are similar this year. Some of them are a little bit different. So we, you know, certainly use some of that experience to improve the process a little bit this year. At least we felt we improved it this year. Yeah, but ultimately, we're still going to try to, you know, evaluate the players and make the decisions that we feel like are best for the football team. We'll continue to do that, and you know, that's really what we've always tried to do. I don't think the mission's changed.
A quick follow-up. I apologize, Stacey. We don't get too many opportunities with you, Bill. Just a question about the draft process. The college football season was so strange this year with truncated seasons and some guys not playing. What's it like watching film from this past year? Do you find the film to be just as useful as it was in previous years?
No, I think that's a really good question. And it depends on the team that you're talking about and the circumstances that they played in. It could be also, you know, the individual player that you're evaluating. So I think that question has some, you know, twists and turns to it. It has an application that there with variance depending on which player, which conference, and the set of circumstances around that team or that individual player. So, you know, in some respects, the 19 film is probably a better, you know, more of an apples to apples comparison of where players were.
This has to drive him crazy. He's been in the NFL for almost 50 years, since 1975. There's an arc of improvement that you expect to see from a player as he goes from 17 to 18 to 19 to 20. And some of these guys played a little bit this year. So how much do you put into that? And whose competition were they against? And did you have all your receivers? And did some of them opt out? And some guys didn't play at all. What a cluster, huh?
It is. It is. And you're talking about whether it's young Trey Lance, who got just one game this year, or it's young Micah Parsons, who didn't play at all this year because he opted out, or Caleb Farley or Gregory Rousseau, any of these guys who opted out, or how about the entire Pac-12, Tom, that didn't get a full schedule, really. So you only get a handful of games from somebody like the Stanford quarterback, Davis Mills. And you look at it and say, okay, well, he did get better from last year to this year. And he did get better from week one to week five or whatever it is. But do we still feel good about that arc and where it's going and where it could end up? It's got to be so difficult. And I think Bill Belichick, he didn't put it completely plainly in his conversation with us, but it's going to be really hard to bet on these guys that you didn't see this year who didn't play great last year, right? So you got to have that awesome resume from 19 if this year was a mess for you.
There's a three-year ripple effect on this NFL. The 19 class, i.e. Jarrett Stidham, who didn't get his second year offseason. The 20 class, which surprisingly, there's players like Kyle Duggar, Justin Herron, and Mike Onwenu, who perform tremendously despite having no run-up. And then this 21 class, which probably didn't have much of a final season in college and will have a little bit of a weird run-up into the league, because now they have to compete with guys from the 19 and 20 classes who are on the same, not on the same, but they're in the same general learning curve. General, not specific, but general. So it's really interesting. But
I will say this, and it's going to sound like I'm speaking out of both sides of my mouth. I do wonder if any part of him says there's going to be a little bit of a market inefficiency here where teams aren't going to be willing to bet on guys that they didn't see a whole lot from in 2020. But I will be, because I know what I saw. And even if it's a small sample size, I'm good with that. And I talked to his coach and I've got a great relationship with him. And plus our scouts have a great relationship with people from that area and they can figure out what we really want. And so maybe you end up getting a steal in the sixth round on a guy who did nothing this year because everybody else was scared to take him.
And it's a blend, you know, you got to have to, the way the Patriots have drafted, you can't have a whole lot of Jawan Williamses on the board. You have to have guys that it's a crisp single where you went with the pitch and put it in play instead of swinging from your heels when it's 0-2 and striking out badly on a breaking ball that was out of the zone. Phil.
The Willie Mo Pena approach.
Give me a break here. I was just told about that. I was entertaining myself.
That's the second round for them, though.
I know. What?
Quinn Miners did 33 reps on the bench in a workout for the he basically had a separate pro day today. He's a freak. They might draft him in the second round.
I hope they do.
He's an animal. He tested the same as Shaq Mason. He's the same Wisconsin Whitewater. Same athlete as Shaq Mason and 10 pounds heavier. Wild.
Okay, let's leave that in the audio version of the pod, please, John. All of it from where I call the 20 for myself, right through Phil just raving about some kid.
Quinn Miners. Friend of the Next Bats podcast.
2-1. All right, Phil, we're probably going to edit that part out of the linear version. That's television, but I want to leave that in. I got caught up in my baseball metaphor and Phil just went bananas there. And folks, that I wanted that in the audio portion just to show you what a weirdo he is and how indispensable he is to me, because I don't give a shit about Quinn until he washes ashore here in New England. That's where I am.
I love the draft. You know what? It's why we're a great match. It's why we're going to have a really fun time on draft night when we do our draft night special on NBC Sports Boston after early edition. We're going to be on early edition, but after that, you're going to be locked in with us because we're going to give you the Patriots ins and outs of every scenario that plays out on night one of the draft. So you don't need the worldwide leader. You don't need the NFL media. Like they do a great job. You're going to want to stick with us, though, because
You're parochial. You're here from our area. You want to know what the Patriots are doing, how it impacts the Patriots when the Jets make a pick, how it impacts the Patriots when the Dolphins make a pick, who the best players available, not for every team are on the board, but PPBPAs. PPBPAs. Phil Perry, best players available.
Or prototypical Patriots. It's another PP.
PPBPPA. Phil Perry, best prototypical Patriots available.
That just, we'll rolls right off the tongue.
We're going to workshop that. My buddy, Yanni Caracas from down in Rhode Island, Channel 12, he does a really good job. You got good media up here. I think you people, you know, you get pissed at the media because, you know, you care and we care and we fight. But top to bottom, you got a lot of media members and you get some real good ones who you might not necessarily know. Yanni Caracas from WPRI TV12 asked Bill a great question about mock drafts and Bill warmed to it. Skull Crusher John Henry, let this answer run.
I think that it, again, each draft's a little bit different, and so each year is a little bit different. But all that being said, you know, at 15, I think we could eliminate a few players that won't be at 15. And then you could look at a couple scenarios and say, well, if, you know, these three players are there, which one would we take? If these other three different players were there, which one would you take? You know, you go through that exercise and talk about that. But I would say normally something, now there's less options at 15 than there are, you know, 28, 30, 31, you know, some other spots that we drafted from. But I would say normally something will happen and there could very well be a player there that either you don't expect to be there or maybe he is a couple spots, maybe at 12, 13, he's still on the board and you really thought that he'd be gone in the top 6, 7 picks. And then that, you know, then the question comes, you know, do you move up and try to get that player that's fallen a little bit? And so those are kind of the scenarios you go through. You know, which players would you move up for to get? Which players would you not move up for that, you know, you would wait and decide whether you wanted to pick them at the spot that you're at? And what players, you know, if certain players weren't there and you felt like, well, the value of that pick might be the same whether you're at 15 or at a lower position, or again, it's the same thing in every round, but you're talking about the first round, you feel like you're going to get the same player, the same quality of player, or maybe the player that you like for whatever reason you think would be available at 20, then maybe you trade back to 20 and take them there, or take that value at 20 rather than taking it at 15. So, and again, I'm just picking numbers here out of the hat, but the concept is, that's really what it is. Who do you move up for? Who do you take if you stay, and what players are on the board? And if players are on the board that you feel like don't add a lot of value, or maybe they're not the kind of fit for your team that you're looking for at that particular situation, then maybe you say, okay, maybe we consider moving back. Now, you can only move back if somebody else wants to move up. So ultimately, you've got to be ready to pick. But sometimes, there have certainly been many times where we felt that we were able to get the same player or a comparable value at a lower point in the draft, and so we moved backwards. So again, really all that is to say the best thing we can do is do our homework, know the players, know the board, and you know, when we walk into the room for the final exam, and then we see the questions on the test when it comes our turn to pick, or maybe a few spots in front of our pick, then we have to, you know, potentially start making some decisions. And sometimes people will come to you with opportunities that you may not have anticipated, and then you have to make those decisions then as to whether or not you would want to move your selection pick up or down, depending on what, you know, what the offer is and so forth. So a lot of it's fluid, but there's certainly the scenarios that are worth going through as exercises to think about and to kind of prepare for. I'd say more often than not, The ones that you go through don't happen. It's usually something a little bit different. But you never know. So it's, again, it's a good exercise.
All right. Bill just ran us. That was like a dog training obedience session where he took us on a leash and ran us all around the obstacle course and made sure we healed and jumped over all the barrels and under the tunnels and everything. And we did, because there was a lot going on there. He talked about trading up, talked about trading back. He talked about how you shop, how you react. I love the phrase that he used about, you know, it's the final exam. How do you react when you get in? Freezing up? What's going on? Your thoughts on his answer?
Legendary NFL head coaches. They're just like us. They love mock drafts too. That's my takeaway there. And the funniest part was towards the end where he says, and usually after you make all those preparations, after you play out every scenario you could possibly think of, something different happens on draft night. And then you have to roll with that. So again, he's told us this before, that they go through a lot, and that's part of what they're going through right now, at least in normal years, Tom, the evaluation, and they may be pretty much done with the evaluations by now, but normal years, they are done with the evaluations on players by now. And you're moving on to things like this strategy, draft night approach, how this is going to work if that happens. So it's all fun. It seems like Bill Belichick has fun with it. Didn't you feel like 100%. Today he was projecting without trying, I think, how much he enjoys this time of year.
I think he enjoys this time of year, and he enjoys the direction of the football team. And I think that, you know, the wolves are not at the door, because we understand, okay, well, he is the greatest coach who's ever strapped on a headset, and he's done things to rectify what we said were kind of shitty decisions. And as a result, we will defer to talking just about the draft. And I think that he feels he's in a better position of strength. And I thought that it was a good conversation, which we're looking for. We weren't illuminated necessarily, but I did think it was good. And I think it's interesting too, Phil, think about this. The Patriots have an answer as to what they'll do if Kyle Pitts is there at 8. They know what they'll do. They know what they'll do if Mac Jones is there at 13. They know specifically, and they probably will have made calls to the Panthers and the Lions prior to say, hey, just want to let you know. I mean, I don't know specifically. Do I not have the greatest, what is that called? Ringtone. But that's, I'm not answering that right now. But they have those answers in house. They're in their minds already. They know what they're going to do when those scenarios come up.
I would think so. And I would think you've already had some initial conversations with other teams, like you're saying, Tom, just to gauge interest and where they might be, so that you're not trying to, in 5 minutes time, figure it all out at once. And you can't prepare for everything, and teams' desires in terms of trades on draft night may change on draft night, but at least you do your due diligence as far as that is concerned. And you go from there. The one interesting part of this press conference, Tom, that we haven't fully touched on just yet, was that he did say, you know, I think we know which players, I'm paraphrasing, which players we could rule out at 15. And if you're a Patriots fan, do you get scared by that acknowledgement? Because there are so many people that want them to move up and get a great player, get a great quarterback, if they think one of these guys is great. And that kind of comment from Belichick is the kind of comment we hear when they are drafting at the bottom of the first round, usually. Well, we know, you know, there are certain players that we're just not going to have a chance at. You know, 15, theoretically, you got a chance at a lot of really good players up in the top part of the draft.
Yeah,
and it sounded like he wasn't really willing to go there.
Yeah, top 7 or 8 players. Yeah, at 15, you could conceivably get into the top 8. But if you already know that Ja'Marr Chase and Wilson and Lawrence and Fields and
Pitts and Penny Sewell. And,
right. Yeah, like ding, 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 ding. We're not going to try and get up with multiple first round picks to get to 6 so we can draft Trey Lance. Sorry, that's not.
Do you think it rules out a move up to 4?
I 100% do. I think that is an upshot of this conference call was more of, we'll trade up for the right guy at 11, 12, or 13. We're not going to pay exorbitant amount to get up for somebody. Like, honest to God, if Kyle Pitts is sitting there at 11, I would hope the Patriots would go say, let's get in this game. Because he's going to be here a hell of a lot longer than Cam Newton is.
He is, but they just spent a lot of money on two tight ends.
Yeah, but he's not a tight end. Go
13 personnel.
Cut Kendrick Bourne's ass immediately. He's a wide receiver. I mean, you know that.
He's a great player. I know,
but I mean, like, that's the thing is Jonnu Smith is not a tight end either.
I mean, they are, but they have versatile skill sets. I know what you're saying. The way I hear it, so it's funny how you hear it and I hear it. I hear him specify at 15 and I say, well, it doesn't mean they're going to beat players out of their reach at 4. What if they get up to 4? You know what I mean? Like if he says, we know we don't have a shot at certain guys at 15, I would be that guy in the back of the room saying, well, what about 7, Bill?
Right. Well, seven. That's what
like
I'm thinking.
7's like you have a lot shot at a lot of guys up at 7, right? Like the scenario changes depending on what they're willing to do. And maybe that is somewhere in the back of his mind. We're not going to have a shot at Trey Lance at 15, but if we move up to 7 with that, you know, then we're talking.
It's like your parents saying to you when you're like 10, we're not going to be waiting for you to come home at midnight. What about 11:30? No, you're 10. What about 10:30? No.
Right.
All right. Great pod, great fun. Next Pats this week featured what?
Next Pats this week featured the great JT O'Sullivan, who acknowledged that if it were up to him, he would probably take Justin Fields over Trevor Lawrence. That's how highly he thinks of Justin Fields. Guy who spent a little bit of time. He had a funny Bill Belichick interaction story, too, that you guys will appreciate.
All right. Make sure you listen to Next Pats podcast on all your favorite podcasting apps. We will talk to you guys next week. Thanks for joining. Have a great weekend.